From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
La Mission,
the Mission District,
Noe Valley.
I live in Silver Terrace.
Coming up, we meet an unlikely army fighting a slippery enemy in the Bay.
Once we got a really big piece of it, and it was just fun to pull it out, and it was huge. It felt really good because you're like, yes, it's gone.
Then we reimagined the anatomy of a science museum.
So the opportunity was, hey, come and help us reinvent what it means to be a museum.
And local musician Rupa Maria fights for biodiversity on her latest tour.
We're conducting a seed exchange around the world. So we're taking a suitcase full of heirloom treasures that belong to life, belong to the commons. They're not for sale, they're for exchange.
Our environment, what lives in it, and our passion for it. That's all today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. San Francisco's marina has been lovely this week. Warm weather, clear skies, a beautiful view. But hiding amongst all those gently rocking boats is a slimy, dangerous invader, seaweed. Sure, you might not mind it when it's sitting harmlessly in your salad, but out in the wild, it's threatening the bay's ecosystem and could actually cause a lot of damage. The front line of defense isn't a city task force or the Coast Guard. It's two scientists, one volunteer diver, and three local high school students. KALW's Casey Miner headed out to the docks to meet the team keeping our waters safe. In just a minute, Carly Ann Johnson will dive into a narrow channel of water, just about 5 or 6 feet between the dock and the seawall. She won't have to dive deep to find what she's looking for.
The population will explode all of a sudden, and we'll be pulling a lot. It might be three or four in a hand. Some of them can be 6, 7 feet long, so it's a lot of plant material. And I just bring it over to the dock. Someone grabs it. I go back and look for more.
Up on the dock, a woman and three teenagers are walking with clipboards and black garbage bags, peering carefully into the water and under boats.
Once we got a really big piece of it, it was just fun to pull it out, and it was huge. It felt really good because you're like, yes, it's gone. I'm Gemma Di Carvalho, and I'm 14 years old.
It's a lot of work to come out and pull hundreds of individuals from the docks. My name's Marianne Cavanaugh, and I'm a biologist.
If Cavanaugh and her daughter Gemma didn't come out at least once a month to locate and remove the invading algae, here's what they say the San Francisco marina might look like.
Like a jungle. I would say if we skip 2 months, when we did that once, we were finding 5 or 6 foot individuals out here. It grows very quickly.
Picture a slimy seaweed thicket, each plant a dark goldish brown with a strong spine, wrapping around ropes, chains, and other sea life. This is Undaria. It's an invasive kelp that has a small but persistent hold in just a few corners of the bay. The kelp was first spotted back in 2009 by Chayla Zabin, an ecologist at the Smithsonian Institute, and some of her colleagues.
So we were at San Francisco Marina doing this survey, and I looked down and saw an enormous alga growing there. It was over 6 feet long. And I pulled it off of the dock and pulled it out and was pretty sure it was Undaria. I had seen it in Monterey. It had not been recorded from north of Monterey previously.
Zabin says the kelp probably came in on small boats. It's native to some areas in Asia. It's been a problem in Southern California for a while, but Zabin says it took Northern California by surprise.
We pulled out 80 pounds of it that day. And so that sort of launched the effort to see if we could get on it quickly and remove it.
Since then, Zabin and some graduate students have been keeping track of all the field data and monitoring whether the kelp is spreading or shrinking. Cavanaugh and her daughter are some of their most dedicated field volunteers. Zabin says these days she leaves most of the organizing to them. And I really want to emphasize this. For 2 years, volunteers have been pulling all this algae out by hand, like weeding a garden. You're right if you think that doesn't exactly sound like a sustainable strategy. But unfortunately, Zabin says, there's no funding to do it any other way. If no one were monitoring it, the kelp would likely spread, changing the bay's ecosystem for good.
So I say to people, well, imagine a redwood forest. Now imagine a meadow, you know, maybe with some oaks, but mostly grass. And it's really easy for us to see that those are completely different systems, even though you could say, well, it's plants. It's all plants.
If that's not compelling enough for you, the kelp's growth could have economic consequences as well.
There's two ways that it poses problems for our pocketbooks as human beings. One is it's just another species that grows on boats, and you really don't want to be sailing around with 6 foot long kelp attached to your boat. It's really, it'll slow you down. It could get tangled in a prop. And the other is its potential impacts on aquaculture. So in the Netherlands, where Undaria has invaded, it's become a problem there for oyster growers and mussel farmers because it grows on the oysters and mussels that they're trying to grow up and harvest, and also on their equipment. So we're concerned about its potential impacts on the oyster growers in Tomales Bay, and certainly further north at Humboldt Bay, oyster growing is a major industry there.
Zabin says these threats probably won't go away. Now that Undaria is here, we should focus on controlling it.
We're never going to be able to completely eliminate it in this time when people are really mobile.
The good thing, though, is that removing the kelp by hand actually does work. The more frequently they remove it, the less it seems to come back. And just being out there means every month boaters and passerby get a reminder that it's still a problem. Zabin says students, community volunteers, and other people from the Smithsonian all come out sometimes to help. Sometimes they're big student groups, sometimes just groups of friends. In another part of the marina, down by the Hyde Street Pier, the staff of Aquarium of the Bay does its own removal. Zabin says they've sort of adopted it. But for the most part, the kelp hunters are the ones here today. Mom, the girls, and a lot of garbage bags.
Okay, should I get Brianna to measure it?
Yeah.
Brianna Kavanaugh is Gemma's cousin.
It's about 50 centimeters?
Yeah.
Centimeters. And it's developing a reproductive structure.
Yeah.
So we'll put developing, reproductive, and what? Where was it?
636 and 638.
Okay. That's like area one, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
Like, once we came here and we found, like, these huge ones, and there were a lot. Like, we had these huge bags full of them that we could, like, barely carry up the dock. But it's been getting a lot better, which is good.
And with that, she finishes writing on her clipboard and moves on down the dock. In San Francisco, I'm Casey Miner for Cross Currents. That piece was co-produced by Alyssa Kapnick. And if you want to help clear kelp from the bay, we'll show you how. It's all at our website, kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. In the Bay Area, we tend to think we've mastered the art of being eco-friendly, and part of that is solving the dilemma of trash and waste. You can walk into most fast food restaurants and find three bins: blue for recyclables, green for compost, and the remaining bin typically has an ominous sign that reads landfill. California has some of the most extensive litter eradication laws in the country. But despite our efforts, a ton of trash still ends up on our streets, roadways, and ecological habitats.
Well, like, we would think that you would find, like, bottles and plastic and stuff, but we found, like, a lot of these white tops. I guess they were, like, black and mild tops.
They're like cigar caps.
Are
they called cigars?
Cigarette.
Cigarette caps.
Yeah.
Found a lot of that. And then a lot of little scraps of like styrofoam and plastic. Like really small. Seeing all the trash and the little pieces, it was kind of like...
Kind of opened up
eye-opening. Like, whoa, I didn't realize it was like this bad. I mean, you hear about it and I saw pictures, but it's just like, okay, maybe it's not really like that. They're exaggerating, but it really is, and it's... I don't know.
It is sad.
Neka Anyanwu and Brianna Guzman are students at Skyline High School in Oakland. At a recent cleanup organized by the Student Conservation Association, they helped pick up trash with 100 other volunteers at the Martin Luther King Jr. Regional Shoreline Park. Jeff Chen, founder of Pick Up America, was also there. With a group of four other conservationists, they set out from Maryland in a biodiesel bus to travel across the country to pick up litter along the road. Since they began their journey, they've picked up over 180,000 pounds of trash and walked along highways stretching over 3,500 miles. They've recently reached the Bay Area. KALW's Laura Flynn joined them to see what they found.
Yeah, so Pick Up America is the nation's first coast-to-coast litter pickup, and we've picked up trash for about 3,500 miles from Maryland to the Oakland area. And the idea is that we're picking up litter because we want to show how much waste we create as a society. And so we're not just a litter cleanup crew. We're a crew that goes into schools and talks to students about waste and why we create waste in society. Our idea is that if we just pick up litter and don't address the main issue of consumption and waste, then the litter's just going to come back.
And how did this journey begin?
I had always wanted to walk across the country, and I kind of combined the idea of picking up trash with walking across the country. Out came Pick Up America. And so we got together, four of us in 2010, just did some planning for 2 or 3 months, and then we hit the road in March 2010. Since then, we've been on the road for 3 8-month seasons, picking up trash one step of the way at a time.
What has it been like traveling cross country?
I mean, to be honest, it's been very depressing traveling across the country like this. We're viewing the country through our waste stream, taking things that are usable, taking them out of the ground, which causes a lot of destruction, transporting them all around with a lot of oil, using them once or twice, and then stuffing them back in the land in these anaerobic holes where they just sit and rot and create methane.
What's the most unique or unusual object? I'm sure you found a lot, but is there one that comes to mind that you or your team has found?
Jane found $850 one time in one envelope. Found a couple of dead chickens in weird situations. I think I found a bobcat in a trash bag one time. That was in West Virginia. A lot of sex toys. A lot of porn.
I mean, what about in California?
Every state we've gone through, basically, the trash we pick up is about 50% trash and 50% recycling. Once we hit California, it became 90% trash and 10% recycling. I think the reason for that is because California has the bottle deposit, and so there's a high economic incentive to keep that litter off the ground. So I think California's bottle deposit is really working here, keeping plastic, keeping aluminum, keeping all this disposable stuff out of the landfill. But on the other hand, there's a lot more trash here.
That was KALW's Laura Flynn speaking with Jeff Chen, founder of Pick Up America at the Martin Luther King Jr. Regional Shoreline Park in Oakland. Pick Up America will be at the Green Fest this Friday and Saturday in San Francisco. And you can also join them for the final stop of their tour this Sunday at San Francisco's Ocean Beach. They'll be gathering trash from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, go to KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Activists are often the most visible champions for a healthier planet. But over at the California Academy of Sciences, there are many scientists who are also very passionate about the environment. The person in charge of translating that passion from the lab to the public is Elizabeth Babcock. Listener Allison Brown, who works with Elizabeth at the Academy, nominated her for our passion profiles.
She is excited, passionate, and exuberant about getting kids to learn and getting them to learn science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. She not only wants to help the Bay Area, but you can tell by how she talks that she wants to fix the world. And if I had to bet that someone could, I would bet on Elizabeth.
We sent KALW's Ashley Ann Krigbaum out to the California Academy of Sciences to talk with Elizabeth Babcock, and she brought back this profile.
So my title is Chief Public Engagement Officer and the Roberts Dean of Education at the California Academy of Sciences. My name's Elizabeth Babcock. So I have the lucky job of getting to be part of organizing programs and ideas that we can do to really help the public understand science and sustainability better. My goal and why I came here was the science education crisis, actually just the education crisis in our country, is really troubles me. Basically, our students and our young people are not performing as highly as we would expect or hope for a country as rich as we are. To me, this is such a critical, critical problem, one that's going to have a huge impact on the future of our society. So when the opportunity here came up to basically how do you make a museum relevant in a way that's going to transform people's understanding of science, in particular of sustainability as well. So the opportunity was, hey, come and help us reinvent what it means to be a museum. And I couldn't pass that up. It's an amazing opportunity. So we are actually one of the longest standing penguin colonies at a place like this. So what we're doing now is we're standing in front of the penguin exhibit. And these are actually African penguins. And I'm sorry to tell you, but these are actually endangered in the wild. So we partner with conservation organizations to actually help preserve these penguins and save them from extinction. So right now we're just looking at them. They're all, there's one. He's shaking his tail and flapping his wings. And some of the other ones look like they're standing at attention. We've got one curious fellow over here who's taking a little dip, swimming around a little bit. And they're fascinating. I love coming down here to watch big groups of people on the weekends watch these penguins, because the whole idea of having the live animals here is to really engage people with them in a very personal way, so that they don't just say, oh, it's a penguin, but that they learn more about them, they come to care for them, and they come to understand how important it is for all of us to take a role in helping to protect the natural environment so that animals like this don't go extinct. And I think the other thing I'll just point out is that science, we all depend on science for our future. So when we think about the problems facing our planet, you know, overpopulation, environmental change, loss of biodiversity, needing new kinds of solutions for food and medicines and healthcare, all of those are based in science. So if we don't have a science literate and engaged science populace, where is the innovation and creativity going to come to invent those solutions? So when I look at little kids, I'm thinking, I hope that some portion of you all are so inspired that you're going to take this into your career and invent some of those solutions that we're going to need in order to keep our standard of living going and also make the world a happy, healthy place.
Who in your life is passionate about something they love? Nominate them and we may visit them. Leave a message on our feedback line with your nomination at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And now it's time for some artery, cultural coverage that goes on the road. Rupa Maria, lead singer of the local band Rupa and the April Fishes, is in the middle of an international tour, but it's about way more than her music.
We're conducting a seed exchange around the world. The first 10 farmers that show up at our show with seeds that they've saved to exchange can get in for free.
This purposeful approach to music is common for the doctor-turned-bandleader. Her tour is to promote her new album called Build, and it kicked off at the idea-packed Bioneers Conference in Marin County last month. The tour ends tomorrow night at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. Rupa spoke with KALW's Holly Kernan about what inspired her new album.
Say what you like. Say what you will. Got everything I need right here.
The title track of the album Build was inspired by my younger brother, who's a urban ag guy in San Francisco. So learning about the urban ag movement really inspired me. Seeing how in the midst of economic collapse around the world and even in our own San Francisco where houses or people are being kicked out of their houses, you can take a seed and put it in the ground and grow a tomato. So what belongs to life still belongs to life, no matter if that tomato has then been taken and put in on a market stand for purchase. There's something about that act of putting a biological entity, a seed, a little powerful pebble into the earth, watching it grow, and then in getting food and eating. And that action is above and beyond economics. It's above and beyond the institutions we place around it. It belongs to life. 88% of the seeds of foods we eat on Earth are owned by one corporation.
What, Monsanto?
Monsanto. And so to be able to take seeds and travel with them the way that farmers have over thousands of years, the way we have such great varieties of edible foods, are because communities of farmers have been cultivating and saving and exchanging seeds for thousands of years. So it's been an interesting examination and experience.
And you've always done that kind of touring, having a message around the music, like when you did the bike tour, right? Or even when you wrote the song, I think, because you were in the ER and there was a woman who couldn't get treatment for breast cancer and so she died. I mean, I remember these kind of personal stories that resulted in both your music and then your activism around those issues.
Yeah, for me, music is a byproduct of a life lived in inquiry and celebration. So having the courage to open up my eyes and see what's happening around me and how, you know, whose voice is heard, whose voice is not heard, who is invisible, who is not invisible, how is power being distributed, and how is that affecting people. So I see a lot of that as a doctor, and that is incredibly inspiring to write about and to learn about. And so for me, our touring is a way of educating myself. And then what comes out of that is as a byproduct are more songs.
Baby, you're gone. Baby, you're gone and I can't find you. Baby, you're gone, so long gone. I must carry on.
This album I wrote in the wake of a big heartbreak. It was the end of a major relationship of mine 3 years ago. And as my music has grown, that relationship couldn't sustain it. And so as that broke, coupling heartbreak with traveling around the world made for this interesting concoction, and you can hear it on the album where there'll be these very intimate personal songs, one of them being Gone. So these songs are intimate and in that space of a broken heart. As I was traveling, it just left me more open and empathic to what I was witnessing. And it allowed for these stories of people as we travel around the world and go to places like Athens, Greece, where we're watching society just fall apart. And it's a wild time around the world. It's a time of great global awakening. And to be witnessing that in the space of heartbreak allowed for a certain kind of permeability, I think, of ideas.
That's Rupa Mario of Rupa and the April Fishes. They will be playing at the Great American Music Hall on November 9th. And Rupa, I'd like you to talk about one other song off of your album, which is Metamorphosis.
Metamorphosis is a song about change, which I learned in Greek how to say it. It's metamorphosis.
Can you say that again?
Metamorphosis.
Just say it more serious.
You're very serious. I was imagining, I felt like my life was completely returning to its constituent elements. So I was imagining, what is it like to be a caterpillar inside the cocoon where, you know, does it hurt when their limbs completely return to their cellular, you know, these pluripotent stem cells, when your body just goes through that and then you emerge as something completely different, like, oh, what are these wings? And do you remember your life before? And yeah, so I was in that cocoon space writing that song, and yeah, it's a song about transformation and just giving into it because it's happening.
I sit here and wonder what spell I've been under. As I open my eyes, everyone's disappeared. And it's some kind of eerie, it's some kind of strange. It's some kind of silence as things rearrange. Oh, I'm mystified. All that I know, all that I know, oh, liquefied and alone. Metamorphosis.
And where are you now?
I have come out of the cocoon, and I'm looking at these wings going like, what? So I think I'm learning how to fly. Probably going in circles a little bit, but yeah.
Ain't nothing I can do, no, no.
And how do you see the evolution of, or the progression of your career?
How do I see it? It's a meandering path. It feels like my life is becoming more of an expression of my art as I go on. This year and these last 2 years, I've decided to make my living off the music and practice medicine when I'm in a place to practice it for free, in order to change my relationship to what medicine is for me. You know, growing up as a doctor in a capitalist society where medicine is a for-profit industry, it affects how you practice, whether or not you admit it or not. It's in the very nature of how you learn to practice medicine. And so for me, it's nice to have some space to step aside from that and think like, ooh, okay, if I did this for free, how is this going to change my dynamic with my patients? How does it change what I do?
How does it?
It feels amazing. It always has felt amazing, but it feels even more amazing.
And what's one final song you want to play for us from this new album, Build?
I would say Sur la route, which is a song in French, which means on the road. And that song is the opening of that song, you can hear this beautiful viola. It's this electronic musician named Janot. So Janot is blending the sounds of the street with this viola. And then in comes the voice, as if like from the wind, of Asma Mahfouz, who is the woman on YouTube who risked her life to make a video to tell people to come down to Tahrir Square last January and demand their human rights, demand their dignity. And so her voice comes in as if just like from the wind, like if you're listening to what's happening around the world, there are these voices, these just everyday people getting the courage to speak up. For me, the song is about a surrender to my life, which is it becomes sort of a mendicant, teacher, student, doctor thing, artist. I don't know how to describe it.
Mendicant, teacher, student, doctor thing.
And just like as I go, like just witnessing the nomadic nature of my life and surrendering to it and really giving into it and allowing it to transform me, allowing myself to go through the metamorphosis, to allow myself to be the most effective communicator and student of what I'm witnessing.
Rupa Maria spoke with KALW's Holly Kernan. Rupa and the April Fishes are playing at the Great American Music Hall tomorrow night, November 9th. Find more information on our website, kalw.org. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Maya DePaula-Hanica, Chris Hoff, Alyssa Kapnick, RTM's Konahovs, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Panina Eilberg-Schwartz, Judy Silber, Stephen Short, Anna Sterling, and RJ Sloan. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.